Welcome to Rumble. I am your host, the Cosmic Rotter, host of The Cosmic Show. You could follow me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, podcastindex.org, and many other platforms. I'm so excited to be streaming exclusively only live here to Rumble. I'm trying to figure out the OBS. I'm trying to figure out all the other things behind it, but I have the chat pulled up here. It should be in transparent mode. So for everybody today, we are going to have a pretty news-filled day. Not too bad. Andrew Tate made a statement on his House release trial or request being delayed for another month. He went off on Twitter for 15 minutes, but people are also questioning his story, of course. The Tucker interview on Twitter, that one's being heavily scrutinized. And also the victim allegedly has made many false accusations in the past, but there's also a counter to that in that she was a previously traumatized victim herself. There's so much to be going on with that story. The craziest story I came across over the weekend, though, was 100% the COVID jab bad batch story. That shit kind of blew my mind. And it's positing the powers that be knew exactly which ones were bad and which ones were good, and they dispersed them and sent them out to a few key regions. You guys tell me if you guys think you could guess where they sent them. Other than that, we'll talk about Diddy being a creep, and we'll also check in on the Adam 22 situation. I am going to go ahead and just make sure my podcast is working right now, okay? That's always important. Sounds like we're doing pretty good so far, okay? I might do one more pause shortly and check it out again. But like I said, follow the audio-only version of this show as well. It'll be uploaded to Twitter after the Rumble stream. Let's go. Let me pull up the chat here on my window. We have an update from Adam22. And he's maybe obviously joking, maybe not. He's entering Jack Murphy territory right here. That's all I know.
I guess we're doing this today. Hey, Jason Love, I trusted you to pork my wife, and it seems like that clout is getting to your head. You're talking real, real spicy, and I ain't really feeling it. Number one, the angle of the dangle is more important than the cubic of the pubic. That's number one. Number two, my D game, when I'm serving it, man, it's just like your mom's home cooking, because there's a special ingredient. It's called love. You ever heard of it? Number three, don't make me expose you. And you know what I'm talking about. It could get real, real messy out here. Number four, you don't want problems moving around in these LA streets, because I can make that happen. I'm very, very well connected. And number five, you are officially blacklisted. I'm smashing my wife again. Show some respect.
I think your wife was the one who was blacklisted. He went and told all the homies. Afterwards, what do you think happened, bro? He waved at all his homies that are waiting in the other room. There's a whole bunch of shit that happened that you don't even know about, Adam 22. That's what I think happened. Is that too mean or what? What do you think? I think that's probably about right. I don't know. This guy's going through it. He looks a little stoned, but that's the best you can come up with being stoned. That's crazy. This guy. Sad man, Adam 22. I don't know how this one's going to end, though. I don't have any ideas. I don't have any theories on this. Usually I have some speculation right away. But he's refusing to just say, hey, I made a whoopsie, you know? I shouldn't have let this dude... Like, it was bad timing, at least. Give the marriage a couple of months. But shit, dude. I don't even know what to say. I don't know what to say about Land of the Plug that hasn't already been said about Afghanistan. That shit is bombed and depleted. Chappelle. Shout out Chappelle! Long live Chappelle! Alright. We're doing the quick roundabouts on the Twitter, but... Did he be trending once in a while for being creepy, yo? He be trending every now and again. Let's go back to a long time ago. this is a very little Justin Bieber. I want to say 10 to 12 year old Justin Bieber, which would be what, at least 12 to 15 years ago now, if not longer. How long ago? How long ago was that? Anybody know? Just look at this, okay? This is only the start of it.
Yeah, so as soon as you turn 16, you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna let you rock this every time.
Okay, maybe he's like 14 or 15. I'm just saying, though, every so often, there's some weird shit popping up around Diddy.
Right? Yeah, this will be yours. So, every time you come to LA, it's a little dusty, but you know, I'm gonna put the front shot in.
Man.
Edit that out. Minute.
Woo. Okay.
Okay.
All right, so I'm gonna be driving this next year.
Yeah, when you get 16, you come down there, you gotta, you know, wear your seat.
I mean, I'm 15, you can ride in the passenger seat. I got my permit now that. Not yet.
Right. 16. Not ready. Slow down, Jess.
One step at a time.
But yeah, the keys is yours when you get 16. You're good to go.
I'm good to go.
Yeah.
All right.
And then when you get 18, you get the house. You get the mansion.
Okay. I get the mansion? Yeah. All right. So where are we off to now?
I mean, it looks like a kind of a nice house, but it's not the best house. Where was this?
Where would you like to go?
Wherever you
want to
go.
So check this out, yo. Justin, you ever seen the movie 48 Hours? Right now, he's having 48 hours with Diddy, him and his boy.
Nobody's ever seen
They're having the times of their lives, like, you know, where we hanging out and what we doing. We can't really disclose, but, it's definitely a 15-year-old's dream.
You can't disclose where we're hanging at?
You know, I have been given custody of him. You know, he signed to Usher.
I'm signed to Usher.
That was the craziest shit he said to me. Like, in my opinion, just alarm bells went off. Like, you got custody, motherfucker? Like, what, did you go to CYFD and adopt this kid? Or did you really have his guardianship signed over to you by the parents? Is this how Hollywood works? And then I start to remember, of course this is how Hollywood works. You forget these little weird contractual trick things they do to get these kids when they're super young. And even if there were allegations, if they weren't substantiated, you couldn't necessarily just wrest them out of control of a billionaire. What the fuck, man? Don't let your kids go with celebrities, people. And I don't want to hear no Michael Jackson talk. It's a different story.
I had legal guardianship of Usher when you know he did his first album. I did Usher's first album. I don't have legal guardianship of him, but for the next 48 hours, he's with me. So we gonna go buck full crazy.
I'm taking this out tonight.
What you wanna do? What you wanna do over the next 48 hours?
48 hours. Let's go. Let's just go get some girls. Let's go hang with some girls.
Justin,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Your nuts haven't even dropped yet, Justin. Anyway, what do you guys think about that? A little weird? Not so weird? I want to hear your guys' opinions. I can't be the only one losing my mind here, okay? Can't be the only one that has red flags going up. That's not even the thing that made the news. That's not even the weirdest one we're going to see today. We got Diddy with Meek Mill in a pool, of course. Look, and then the Justin Bieber one still comes up. This is hilarious. Meek Mill looks sad today.
Yeah, what's up, King Son? Man, you doing it, man. You deserve it, Daddy. You putting in that work. Proud of you. I love you. Yeah. Yeah, what's up, King?
You put in that work, Daddy. Oh, I love you, my Daddy. Is this how people talk? Is this how normal people talk? When's the last time you called your male best friend daddy? There's something else going on. What you be doing to these dudes' booty holes? It's not right. It's not right.
King Son. Man, you doing it, man. You deserve it, Daddy. You putting in that work. Proud of you. I love you. Yeah.
I hate it. Shout out to everybody that broke out the Diddy spell. The Diddy debacle, if you will. Let me see. Let me see if there's any other crazy shit I could find on here really quick about Diddy being a pedo. I just said it. This is one guy. Look at Lucky Luciano. Diddy is one N-word I never want to be left alone with in any circumstance. Oh, my God. Oh, here we go. Queen Diddy. What is this?
You gotta keep the hair.
I'm thinking I'm going to wear this hair in Toronto. In the morning.
Hey, yo, let me ask you a question.
When I get to...
You gotta keep the
That's
hair.
Him.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to wear this hair in Toronto. In the morning.
Oh, no. This is getting worse. The more I scroll down, the worse it gets. Oh, here we go. July 12th. Diddy, man, somebody's cooking some good shit outside. I'm just saying, it's distracting me. Holy shit, this smells good.
Welcome to Empower Global, a new marketplace launching today for black businesses and customers worldwide. With the launch of Empower Global, our goal is to provide a platform for black businesses to reach a global audience and empower customers to support and shop the best black-owned brands in beauty, fashion, art, and lifestyle. We want to elevate the black economy by creating opportunities for black entrepreneurs to build and scale.
What happened to Aunt Jemima? Bring back Aunt Jemima. It's a bunch of bullshit. Oh, man, I think that's all we could do for him. He's a whole episode. He's a whole episode in of himself. Just for all the weird shit he's always been into forever. All right, guys. Before we get to a story that's not advertised, that's actually going to be a main segment, we're going to talk about the Long Island serial killer right before Andrew Tate and the other main news we have. But first, let's go ahead and do a palate cleanser early on in the show, get the vibes a little bit more positive. But before then, make sure you hit the subscribe button on the Rumble, guys. Make sure you support the chat. We really need you guys to be interactive with the chat. You gotta really help us drive the interaction. Be part of the show. We're going to have another show me and Mars Bars are coming up with. And we're going to do, it's going to be called the Calling Out Show. We're going to take viewer calls, any internet beefs, any other just trifling things they want to vent about, talk about, whether it's another big creator, whether it's one of their friends, whether it's one of their friends on Twitter. We're going to have a space where they could just all be a part of that and have responses. They could call in and we'll just hash it out there. Sometimes it's going to be just trolling. But sometimes we're going to try to help people. Think about, like, Loveline or something in the 90s. You want to bring that vibe to the internet. This story was nuts, okay? This Aussie got lost at sea after a brutal storm but kept himself and his dog alive on rainwater and fish for 2 months. Dude, this is him when they first started off. We're going to watch video of him when he first gets rescued. It's over 2 minutes long. But sailor Tim Shattuck and his dog Bela left La Paz, Mexico 3 months ago on his catamaran sailboat, the goal of reaching French Polynesia. Look how far he tried to go. Holy shit. 1 month into the journey, his boat was damaged in a storm that destroyed his electronics, presumably including navigational tools and radio. The retired IT worker and cancer survivor, 51, kept himself and his dog alive until a Mexican tuna trawler rescue them over the weekend. This is, like I said, this is an awesome story.
Okay, can I get your name, please?
Tim Shattuck.
Okay, where are you from?
I'm from Australia.
He looks a little bit worse for wear, but he's alive. Sydney man Tim Shattuck and his dog Bella, safe.
I just got fishing gear, survival gear.
A tuna trawler stumbling across the catamaran in the middle of the Pacific Ocean by sheer luck. And once on board, Timothy Shattuck began sharing a truly remarkable tale of survival at sea.
Been through a very difficult ordeal at sea, and I'm just needing rest and good food because I've been alone at sea a long time.
His grown-out beard and obvious weight loss paint only the beginning of this story.
If you look at just what that previous photo I showed you, you can't see much, but he lost at least 30 pounds. You could say that much. And he wasn't big to begin with. He's a thin guy to begin with. This is a miracle.
I have not had food, enough food for a long time.
Timothy departed La Paz in Mexico 3 months ago, bound for French Polynesia. 1 month in, bad weather struck down his catamaran, wiping out all electronics on board. For 2 months, Tim and his dog Bella survived on rainwater and raw fish. Until 2 days ago, by chance, a tuna trawler's helicopter spotted Tim's catamaran from the air and sent the ship to his rescue.
Está consciente.
He's conscious, he's chatty, and he's eating small meals, Timothy's specialist doctor told Nine News. The physician is working.
He's probably so sick and fucking tired of tuna and fish, and they're probably still feeding him tuna because they're on a tuna trawler. Oh my God. What a disaster. I would hate that shit. I would not be a happy customer. I'd be like, y'all don't got one pizza on this fucking boat.
Working with the captain on board the trawler to provide medical care.
I have very good medicine. I'm being looked after very well.
While he needs food and rest, the sailor hasn't suffered any major illness or injury, and he protected himself from serious sunburn by hiding under a canopy on board his catamaran. The doctor comparing Timothy's tale to Tom Hanks' Castaway. It's impossible to miss the uncanny similarity. The journey back to land is a slow one. The trawler is now making its way across the Pacific and en route to Mexico, where Timothy will be met with further medical assistance and the sheer relief of being back on solid ground.
Okay, thank you, sir. We hope to stay in land very quickly.
I think he's shocked he's alive. I think this guy is fucking just shocked. He's even talking to a person again, just straight up. God bless him. Ooh, alrighty then. Let's get to some weird shit on the Long Island serial killer. That is something that is, it's a weird one, folks. I'm not saying you have to put on your tinfoil hat, but you got to be very wary at how they caught this guy. He's a big, I don't want to say power player, but he was an architect in downtown New York. He must be worth six figures a year. And they barely find him now all of a sudden. And I remember coming across this one very, very bizarre interview from some independent journalist, some French interview guy. And it was before anybody even had a clue. So it seems to be a very candid take on how he might be, you know, when he was walking around in normal life and hiding amongst us. But let's go ahead and just get a little synopsis of the story, shall we? I'm sure a lot of people are not familiar with this. I'm kind of familiar with the story. I honestly should be a lot more interested in this as a true crime fanatic. But I think since it was so far away in New York, I'm like, yeah, fucking course it's New York. Of course there's serial killers. That's literally how my mind worked on that one. But here is Eyewitness News, ABC 7, New York, 2 days ago, 780,000 views. Everything we know about the Gilgo Beach investigation, extra time. Don't forget to hit the like button on the Rumble.
From ABC 7 New York, this is Eyewitness News Extra Time.
Has been found in Oak Beach, and police believe there may be other bodies out there.
Yeah, and Liz, this is the barrier island to the south of the town of Babylon. An extensive search that goes on for a good mile along the bay here, south of the town of Babylon. You could see crime scene investigators Babylon. There, and then the Tony, fuck? If you want to come back out, you could see behind me, and then clear up the beach right here. There are multiple outposts here where they're right now sifting through the sand and looking for human remains. We know right now that they can confirm in the last couple of days they have found two bodies. We believe skeletal remains, one on Saturday, one today, and we're told possibly more.
There sure were more. It's hard to imagine, surreal in fact, that it's been 12 and a half years since I stood on the beach in the bitter cold. That was December of 2010. Now here we are in July of 2023, and I'm standing in front of the home of a suspected serial killer. I'm Josh Einiger, live in Massapequa Park, Long Island. This is Eyewitness News Extra Time. We're glad you're joining us for this special edition of our streaming show tonight, when we are talking about the Gilgo Beach serial killer, the Gilgo Beach murders, 10 sets of human remains, which were discovered in gruesome fashion along the Ocean Parkway, which spans between Jones Beach and Robert Moses State Park, 13 years ago, practically now. We can show you exclusive video that Eyewitness News just obtained from last night in Midtown Manhattan, when the suspect in at least as many as four of those killings was finally, after all this time, taken into custody. 59-year-old Rex Hoyerman, who is an architect in the city but lives here in Massapequa Park, went without incident with Suffolk and state police investigators, a whole task force who have actually, we are told now, been tracking him for months. Mugshot now, as he was booked into the Suffolk County Jail. He was arraigned on murder charges involving three of the Gilgo victims, and a fourth is likely as well. Eyewitness News reporter Stacey Sager was in court for Hewerman's first appearance today.
He was taken to court this afternoon and said nothing to reporters. But Rex Hewerman did tell his defense attorney he denies all the charges.
The only thing I can tell you that he did say as he was in tears was, I didn't do this.
But local, state, and federal authorities on Long Island outlining today years of quiet evidence collection leading to an indictment against Hewerman for at least three Gilgo murders. That of Melissa the Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello. And they say Rex Hewerman is likely to be charged in a fourth, the murder of Maureen Brainard Barnes. The pattern?
All the women were bound at the head, at the midsection, or at the chest, and later at the legs. They were bound by burlap. The burlap was camouflage burlap used to hide purposely hide the body.
Perhaps a good material.
The indictment against him reading like a movie thriller, saying Hewerman used at least seven burner phones, phones he would toss after his alleged crimes, but not before taking selfies like these to find his victims. Federal investigators were tracking the cell phone activity to four separate towers around the area of Massapequa Park, where they converged today. But they say Hewerman was positively ID'd back in March of 2022, first after a witness described him, then a description matching his Chevy pickup truck, then data listing his address in the so-called box here, Massapequa Park, where all the cell calls were being traced.
Rex Hewerman is a demon that walks among us.
What the fuck? For real?
A predator that ruined families.
But there is more work to do. Other victims not linked to Hewerman, their families also at court today, without closure, but hopeful.
Full justice is all the cases being closed.
There needs to be far more investigation, and maybe the dam will have broken with this fellow.
And remember, there are at least six other Gilgo victims. Investigators have long believed there could be more than one killer. But as for today's indictment, six counts of murder, each one punishable by a potential sentence of life in prison without parole. The judge telling Hewerman he'll be held without bail. In Riverhead, I'm Stacey Sager, Channel 7. Eyewitness News.
What about the next part of this?
We had been hearing for the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, that the investigation had been jump-started with the assistance of the FBI, which has much more sophisticated DNA matching capability and cell phone tracking capability than the Suffolk Police Department was able to bring to bear. And so we can show you some video of actually images that we saw in the criminal complaint in Suffolk County Court today. Investigators found selfies that Hewerman allegedly took with those burner phones, which he
evidence?
Then posted online to search for escorts, to search for sex, frankly, and perhaps lure his alleged victims. We also learned about how they used DNA to match him to the victims with whom he is charged. Hairs that did not match those victims that belonged to a man that were found on the scene so many years ago. Well, investigators, once they were on to Huerman, they waited for him
All right, everybody. If you ever take a lesson from another criminal to eat your pizza crust, you fucking moron. At least, like, throw it to a rat or a raccoon. Do they not have wildlife in New York that's not a violent homeless? Like, you're too scared to give a homeless your pizza crust? Dude, roadrunners would eat that shit overnight where I'm at. It'd be over. There'd be no DNA evidence left for pizza crusts.
Trash. He threw out a pizza box, and on that pizza box, according to the indictment, was a crust inside the box that he had not completed eating. And from that pizza crust, they were able to find enough of his DNA to match with the hair found on the victims at the scene. And that was a key piece of evidence that helped get to this location, this point today. Back live here in Massapequa Park, this is a very small residential bedroom community. A lot of law enforcement people live in this neighborhood, and a lot of working law enforcement now have surrounded the house where Huerman lives with his wife and two children. Eyewitness News reporter Chris Christian Thorne spent the day here in this neighborhood with how people are reacting to the alleged serial killer next door.
It's a shocker. It's scary.
A crime that has captivated the world, a true crime story of movies and books, has come down to this quiet neighborhood in Massapequa Park. Neighbors still can't believe one of the suspected Gilgo Beach killers was living among them.
Oh my God, I know who it is.
The crowds only grew throughout the day, from neighbors to people from all
over. In Albuquerque, you would just have like a black man or a Mexican guy. He might even be half black, half Mexican. Be like, another day. Just another day. We survive another day. We welcome us out of the sun another day. That's basically what would happen.
Long Island, who wanted to get a glimpse of Rex Huerman's house. They saw the investigators in hazmat suits, a car being towed out of Huerman's driveway, and something else hidden under a large tarp. It was like watching a movie. And for those who have been armchair detectives on this case for years, it's a day they never thought they would actually see.
I was saw it on Facebook this morning, and I was at work. And I was just like, listen, I got to take some personal time. I got to go down here because this is a big case.
Shocked. I mean, I would do that, too.
You know, we got to see how it plays out, too. We're talking about the Gilgo Four, so... You all know that's not the end of the story, right? We still got the Manorville stuff.
Great footage.
We still got a lot of the, you know.
Everybody, shout out this stream, but also shout out ABC 7 New York. They have a 17 and a half minute video that could probably substitute for Law and Crime Networks. And everybody knows Law and Crime Networks are a bunch of fucking cucks. So let's check this out.
And yet he is correct. While we know that Rex Huerman is considered a suspect in several of these murders, he is not. In all the other human remains that have been found at Gilgo Beach throughout the years, so the mystery around this case will continue. In Massapequa Park, I'm Kristen Thorne, Channel 7 Eyewitness News.
And that's a key point that Kristen just made there. There were, in the end, actually 10 sets of human remains discovered along the Ocean Parkway. And very early on, investigators, and we could show you video from back then when we were there watching them search both sides of the parkway. Early on, investigators were telling us they believed this was the work of at least two different distinct people. That's because one set of human remains, actually the remains found first, were basically completed sets of remains wrapped in burlap. The rest of them, that was four women. The other six victims were in much more of a sense of disarray, were scattered much farther across Ocean Parkway, and had obviously been there for much longer. So in this case, Huerman is charged only with three of those first four, the fourth likely to be added in the future. But it does speak to how complicated this investigation has been, and that has not been helped by corruption at the top of the Suffolk County Police Department.
You gotta be shitting me. Police corruption on this? Oh, count me in.
Which significantly delayed progress here for years. Eyewitness News reporter N.J. Burkett has a look at the history of this gruesome case.
Bring it, ABC 7. I'm digging
y'all. All four bodies were found in heavy brush within 500 yards of one another.
dumped over the course of 18 months along a remote stretch of Ocean Parkway,
500 yards? What, that's 5 football fields? He didn't try that hard.
Miles from New York. Detectives believe it happened in the middle of the night, that the killer chose the same desolate location each time, pulling onto the shoulder, switching off his lights, and dragging the body out of his vehicle, dumping it no more than 25 feet off the roadside. It would be several years before the first body would be discovered. A wider search revealed 3 others, all women, bound with tape or leather belts and identified through DNA.
Holy shit, they're all white girls. This guy had some kind of fetish. I know that sounds crazy that I said that, but out here in New Mexico, like, whenever there's a serial killing, it's like hyper fetishized. So it's like always a particular race. It's like a bunch of Native women, or it's like a bunch of Hispanic women, or they're like all like mixed race hookers on the West Mesa. It's crazy. I don't know. My mind goes to interesting spots on this, but you got to look at the geographics in New York, in that part where he was targeting. These are what the women look like. I bet you, I wonder if they're partying. I don't know what Gilgo Beach is about. If anybody out there is a New York native on Rumble, please chime in on the location.
All had disappeared between 2007 and 2010. In the months that followed, more bodies would be recovered in the brush farther west, a total of 8 women, a man, and an infant. Prosecutors have charged Rex Hoyerman for the murders of Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello, all sex workers. Investigators say he is the prime suspect in the murder of the 4th, Maureen Brainerd Barnes. Investigators say the technology and the expertise of the FBI are what cracked the case. ABC News contributor Rich Frankel is a former FBI special agent in charge.
What do you think investigatively made the difference, Rich?
So I think it was the analytics and the forensics.
But for years, the FBI was kept out of the case. Frankel blames former Suffolk Police Chief James Burke, who was later indicted and convicted in an unrelated corruption case.
He was, I think, the biggest hindrance to bringing the FBI in. We had asked to go in, and we were denied.
Do you think this case could have been solved sooner?
I don't know if the case could have been solved sooner, but I think there could have been a lot more movement on the case sooner. They did assist in trying to locate other bodies in that area. So there was some work being done, but the problem was that once we did the work and handed it over to the Suffolk DA, we never got it back.
NJ Burke at Channel 7 Eyewitness News.
That's all-American bureaucracy right there. We salute you, America. That's one of the things we're most known for, right? Inefficiency. God bless the American. Oh. I want to shit on the idea of federalism and state power right now, but it would contradict everything I've said to have stood for on Twitter. But there's just no solving the problem that is the United States court system at this point. It's over. Expect crime to skyrocket everywhere. It's hitting the bigger cities first. This isn't a trend. It's going to be nationwide. You're not going to be safe in your suburbs. You're not going to be safe in the rural areas. In the rural areas, be prepared, because you folks that live out in Montana and, you know, rural Oregon and Wyoming know that them dispatches work part-time. You know, PD and shit works part-time in various places throughout the country. So we're about to be in for another rude awakening when this shit hits the suburbs and the farmland. I just mean general chaos.
And for more on this landmark case, we have a very important guest. Bob Boyce was the chief of detectives at the NYPD. He's now an ABC News contributor. Bob, thanks so much for joining us. It's good to talk to you.
Good to be here, Josh. Thank you.
So, and we're on a bit of a delay because we're both out of the studio, so everyone forgive that. But I'm curious what your first reaction was when you woke up this morning and you heard the news. Was this a surprise to you that they finally made this amount of progress?
I was surprised, but I wasn't shocked. I know that Commissioner Harrison had created a task force, Fresh Eyes, as he called it, on the investigation. This case turned
very few weeks into the task force when the trooper did the lawman search that identified the car, the perpetrator's car.
So it said in just a few weeks into the task force, they pulled this off, okay? Another red flag.
And that brought them to the house. They identified through some more information on the car itself. There's an ornamentation on the car. So they had their name early on. Now you build a case around that. They had a subject and they moved forward on it. Great job by the commissioner. Great job by the task force. Kudos to them. Now I'm wondering that house behind you, Josh. I have a little concern about that too. Where did this man commit the crimes? Where did he bind these women up? That's my point when I look behind the house behind you.
It's a great question, Bob, because one of the things that we learned in the criminal complaint today is that they have cell phone records that show that the suspect's wife was out of town at the times that he was involved with the women who ended up dead on the side of Ocean Parkway. So would that be a reason why they've been there all day? They're looking for forensic evidence. And how long would that potentially last? It's been 12, 13 years.
It's different. It's my point exactly. That where did this happen? He met them. The burner phones were key information that helped to the FBI. But that trooper's thing, get him to that front door, that individual, getting that car back and looking at there. So they'll take their time. They're going to look to see if this all of his accounts is what he bought online. This man led a secret life, and you have to really expose that secret life. With all these things he was doing, especially those purchases that forwarded this, the burner phones, how he taped people up to burlap, that's all key stuff here. See what they find in that house in the next couple of days.
Do they need physical evidence of a crime, of a homicide, to make this case, or in your opinion, from what you've seen, do they already have a good enough case against him?
Assholes.
Josh, when you pile all this evidence together, it becomes compelling. Who else could have done it? And look, you're going to expose his secret life and what he's done. Now, he's already been indicted, so he has an absolute right to cancel. You can't talk to him. But there's enough evidence here that's gone forward. This has been over a year since I identified him. So they've had a long time to put this case together, and they did a really good job. And they brought everybody to bear on this individual. So I think it's the DNA, all these took their own.
Right, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're on this bit of a delay, but let me ask you about that long time. You obviously were in the detective bureau at the NYPD. You had a part of this case because one of the victims was from the Bronx. There's well-documented, dysfunction that for years hampered this investigation at Suffolk County. And I guess I'm curious, from everything you know about how this works and how it worked when Chief Harrison, Commissioner Harrison, got involved. If this had happened, this is right on the county line, if this had all happened, if the discoveries had been made in Nassau County, would it have taken this long?
It's hard to say, but I'll tell you, that lawman search has been around a long time. You had an eyeball on the perpetrator's car, or what could have been the perpetrator's car. So that should have been forwarded much more quickly than it was. And there's a lot of things. Technology changes. Those burner phones, the DA said there were seven of them. You have to really track that down. You need the feds and their abilities, their data crunching abilities to solve cases. I've used them. I had never had a problem on calling the FBI and ask for help. And anybody else, the troopers as well.
No,
the more people you have in this fight, the better off you're going to be.
Bob Boyce, retired chief of detectives of the NYPD. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for helping us understand all of this. It's such a fascinating case.
Be well, Josh. Thank you. And be careful with everyone's fear.
Yeah, thank you. We'll do. So Bob Boyce offering us that insight. This has been a momentous day for people on Long Island, for true crime aficionados from around the world. This whole case became such an international spectacle. There were documentaries, there were movies, TV movies produced about this, and now there's been this seismic development and arrest in at least some of the victims who were found along Ocean Parkway near Gilgo Beach. Of course, there are six other victims who investigators believe were victimized, were murdered, were then dumped by someone entirely different from Rex Huerman. So that investigation, of course, continues. And of course, the investigation, the Huerman case, is only now just beginning. As you heard Bob Boyce suggest, it's probably going to be days that they're going to be going over this house here. They've had 12, 13 years that he's had a jump start on getting ahead of investigators, and they've got to, you know, scour that house for any physical evidence they can find.
It's like when you play hide and seek, the motherfucker, you know, tells you to wait for 10 seconds before you start counting. Okay.
We're going to have the very latest on all of these developments coming up tonight on Eyewitness News at 11. More also from Midtown Manhattan outside Huerman's architecture firm where he was taken into custody last night. But for now, that is the very latest live from Massapequa Park, Long Island. I'm Josh Einiger on Eyewitness News Extra Time. Have a great evening.
Very fun video. I enjoyed that for sure. All right, you guys, we're going to go down a rabbit hole a little bit on this one. I hope you appreciate this stream, because the next video is likely about to be axed from this channel. Schrodinger your cat. You got to do S-C-H-R-O-D-I-N-G-E-R space cat on Twitter. But the Schrodinger has the little, not the umlaut, but what's the double O dot over the O? The creator of this video straight up took it off of YouTube after I knew he had it up there, and he's already being interviewed on the Today Show. So let's go ahead and watch this video, get it protected under fair use and educational purposes to support the overall theme of the topics tonight. And we're trying to get some background on Rex Huerman. Maybe we're going to analyze this video for potential psychological cues the police might have missed. Personal cues. Just how does he interact with somebody who's a small reporter off the street who's not necessarily BBC or anything? Like, how does he act when he thinks he's the power guy in the room kind of deal? Maybe that's the kind of thing we'll look at. Big shout out to this guy, though.
Bonjour, I'm Antoine. Today on interview, Rex Huerman, owner of RH Consultant, a Department of Building facilitator. Let's go meet him.
L-I-S-K killer.
How you doing?
Good to see you.
Likewise. I hope you don't mind. I brought my assistant with me, Norman.
Hello, Norman.
Everybody out there, I know there's going to be some comments on me, like, talking over the video and, like, why I'm doing that. But we have to interrupt this, dude. He's going to take this down from everybody. We're going to go to 1080 HD on this one. Yeah. Let's go ahead and react to it. Reaction education video.
Norman? I see it's raining out.
Yes, it's raining. Yeah. Yes, yes, yeah. Please. Okay.
I know. You said you like to do this outside, but Mother Nature is not cooperating today.
Yeah, to say the least, I tell you that. Being in your office, all right?
I wasn't please looking chat. Forward to doing this under a scaffold.
I cannot understand. Okay, anyway, let's dive in. So, tell us, you know, who you are, you know, where you're from, and how long you've been in New York.
Okay. Rex Huerman, I'm an architect.
Weird
I'm
shit,
an architectural
right?
consultant. I'm a troubleshooter. Born and raised on Long Island.
Okay.
Been all working right. in Manhattan since 1987.
Oh, wow.
Very long time.
Okay. So this brings directly to my first question. So, you know, can you explain to our audience what is it that you do? Not the architect part of your business, but the other part of the business, which is it's my understanding that you're kind of a facilitator with the Department of Building. Is that correct? But please tell us.
That's correct, but much more.
Okay.
What
that's
I do,
much more I'm interested.
I do troubleshooting, architectural troubleshooting, and negotiations with the building department.
Okay.
What I mean by that is, do we do the standard stuff with the building department, handle your filings, I have other clients who are a lot of other architects, and we'll handle their interactions with the building department, especially out-of-city architects, because they're a little afraid of the city. And when, when a job that should have been routine suddenly becomes not routine, I get the phone call. Whether it's an old building and they need somebody to understand.
Okay. Couple thoughts. Just a couple thoughts right here, really quick. Let me go ahead and type a couple thoughts in the chat. Somebody like this is probably very familiar with Section 8 housing and assisted living. That's the big boondoggle. It's guaranteed contracts through the federal or state governments and oftentimes combined hybrid federal state government contracts. I'm absolutely certain he's probably planned multiple projects in his background. That's the first red flag. The fact that he could talk like this, negotiate like this, makes me feel like he does have experience talking to some like really, really high people in the HUD, in the respective departments. He's probably done some certain conferences. If this guy is really the killer, man, what better career to have than an architect who's helped design multiple city projects? And just speculating, if this guy is the one, like I said, I'm always super suspect when they come up with a killer weeks after a task force is formed, but maybe police departments do that to get the money from the monetization that occurs with the story. Maybe that's another thing people don't think about, too.
Stands and can maneuver the 1938 building code or the current building code. You look surprised when I say 1938 building code. I've actually used the 1901 old tenement laws here in the city of New York, and you can legally do so.
Oh, wow.
Is that Jewish? I mean, I'm not... No homo or no JQ, just asking, like, what? Tenement? Or is it like... Tenant. Did you try to say tenant?
That's one of the little things that
you do.
People don't always understand when it comes to building codes.
Only two beers.
They never read the administrative section.
So what decided you to launch that particular, I would say, a niche of a business? Was it because out of... frustration on your side as an architect? You say, I can't believe, you know, I didn't think about that. Let me dive into it and let me try to maybe make it a business out of it. Or was just, you know, you just decided to do it?
Actually, it was Harvey's fault.
Of who?
In 1987, when I came to work in the city.
Harvey who?
The first architect I worked for was Harvey Rosenberg.
Okay.
Great man.
Rosenberg. Harvey
that
Rosenberg.
Year, a new All law right. came out. Local law 58 of 87.
Okay.
That's all the handicap access.
Okay.
They said,
did you?
You're the new guy. You read it. So, I read
it. You read it.
There was a situation dealing with the city. They said, well, go meet with the city. I did. I was effective at it. He said, go do it again.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's how the whole thing started.
Okay.
And he did a lot of work with not-for-profit agencies for developmentally disabled. So that's where I started doing a lot of my building code consultant with him, as well as the design and drawings for these facilities. And the one thing I learned very quickly was the building department could not understand them.
Couldn't understand what?
Their own codes, their own laws, because you have what we would call a group home for developmentally disabled.
Okay.
It doesn't exactly fit the code book. And the plan examiners who were...
I'm beyond disturbed. the fact that the mentally disabled thing, he's dropped at least 3 or 4 times. That is just saying to me, he's doing some other stuff, man. Like, I don't like it at all. And it's super creepy. I want to look into this guy, everything else, all of his other business contracts now. But this shit just ain't right, man. I'm just saying, it's not right. I don't like this. I don't like this. I mean, even if he's taking the fall, he is not the... We're speculating too much now. Let's take a deep breath, Marauder.
Work for the building department, didn't fully understand it. So part of my job became educate the city.
So you educate the city about their own code.
Correct.
That has been, you know, our laws.
That's been something we've been doing ever since, and we still do today.
So you started with a firm, and then when you decided to launch your own, you decided, you know, let me continue that route of the consulting. Is that correct?
That's basically correct.
Yeah.
But the way it all happened was a recession in the early 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh, and we're all trying to figure out who to work for.
Shout out Ross Bro.
And that's when I met my very, very first paying client, uh-huh. Robert Meyer.
Robert Meyer, okay.
I'm in the Queens Building Department. It's before lunch. I want to get to lunch. We're back in those days, you had to physically stand in line
yes.
with your paperwork because this predated the computer system.
Yes.
And he was dealing with the clerk at the certificate of occupancy counter, didn't know what he was doing. I'm getting impatient. I go, excuse me, took his paperwork, explained to the clerk what he needed, then explained to him what he needed to do, then move over. Then I took care of what I needed to do. He was standing off on the side.
What do you think is one of the main reasons people are contacting you? Is that because they were badly...
Because they didn't know then. But I know that why they're contacting you now.
He advised or because they don't know all the rules or they try to rush things. Is that what is basically most of the reason why people are contacting you for?
I would say the biggest reason,
yeah.
They're overwhelmed by the city. Mm. They're overwhelmed by the size, complexity of the building department.
Yeah.
And whether it's a restaurant, a place of assembly, a 40,000 square foot retail that we did last year,
uh-huh.
or somebody's co-op, or it's their mother's co-op and she passed away and there's an old application that's 20 years old that nobody addressed that they have to solve to sell it. People get very overwhelmed, not just by the agency and how to deal with the agency, but the complexity of we got plumbing work, structural work, construction work. There was mechanical work done. There's a list of requirements, 20-something things long in the computer. What do we do?
Okay.
We've got 11 more minutes at least in on this, you guys. What is your rating 1 to 10 on if he murdered all those people? I'm getting a solid 6.5. And me being a skeptic, I know everybody out there in the true crime community is like, what? Oh, like, you're so outrageous. But I mean, 6.5 is pretty good for me. I'm giving him a solid 6.5.
So tell me, is this part 65%. Of the, because you're an architect, is this part of the business
as I've grown
your architect business?
Or
he started taking over? Or what?
Sometimes it's the majority.
Really? Yeah, that's
sometimes it's 50-50 with architecture, depending on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
On the architectural side, having all of these capabilities in-house gives me an advantage over other people because I have my own staff.
Yeah.
Most architects will go to an outside consultant.
Like yours?
No, not like mine, called an expediter.
Ah, okay. That's what
the expediter is. They understand how to file. They understand the administrative procedures. Where I exceed that is I have
There's his email. These motherfuckers put his email on. No wonder why they took his... No wonder why the interview creator took this video and made it private. But man, massive shout out to Schrodinger's cat for finding this video. God damn it. That's good.
Where I exceed that is I have the license to practice architecture. So when I go to the city, I can tell them how I feel and what I think they should do. Yeah. And I do that. An expediter can't do that because they work at the pleasure of the city.
Yeah.
I don't.
What a rabbit hole.
So, after all those years, what do you think is the most important qualities a person in your position dealing with the DOB must have?
Patience.
That's funny. I was hoping you would say that.
Yeah. Patience, and I don't like to use the word tolerance, but sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
And it's not just with the city. It's also with the client, because most clients, they don't understand what I have to do, why I have to do it, what it takes to get done.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with somebody in the city, whether it be a clerk at the counter who has to enter data entry, or if I'm dealing with the borough commissioner of Manhattan, you need the patience, because who knows what the person before you did. Sometimes they have very bad days. I've actually gone to the commissioner's office, sat down in his waiting area.
I just killed a bitch.
11:30 in the morning, and a little after 5 o'clock, I heard him finally holler out, "Is Rex still there?" That's how long I waited.
Oh God!
Because that particular client.
Yeah.
I had to see the commissioner. They were the only ones who could give us an answer.
Okay, got it. Oh, Dan, so this is a perfect segue. Do you have a story where the situation, and we don't need names, but do you have a story where situation seemed, you know, very, very doomed, but you were able to deliver at the end? Do you have a good success story to tell us?
There are so many different ways looking at it.
but you have one. Only one. Okay.
One of the first ones to come to mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was
curious.
A building downtown Manhattan.
Okay.
They put a generator on the roof. Typical, generators go on roofs all the time.
Uh-huh, okay.
Except the fuel lines to feed the generator will run through the exit stair. Let's see. Pumping diesel fuel through an exit stair, that generally is not a good idea.
This doesn't sound very safe to me.
No.
And I'm not even in your field.
And we're talking a 20-something story building.
Even better.
The architect who I was working with at the time, I called him, didn't answer. I called him 4 or 5 times. He finally picks up the phone because he happened to be at Passover dinner. And I told him what was going on. All I got was dead silence, then the, oh, my God.
Okay.
Now, you would think, how do you solve this without tearing everything apart?
Exactly. Yeah.
Meet with the commissioner of Manhattan Building Department, and I start negotiating how to do this.
Okay.
And I got very creative with... First, you have to address, I got combustible liquid in my stair. Not good. Can I separate it from the stair?
Okay.
That was question one. Second question is, do you still have enough room for the legal means of egress in the stair? Because you have to maintain minimum width, minimum capacities to get everybody out.
All right. I'm getting a lot.
I can't imagine.
I'm getting lost in the weeds with this nasty motherfucker, but shit, dude. Long Island serial killer. Maybe that's him. Maybe it's not. Maybe he's working with a bunch of other things that we don't quite understand. I gotta do some more research. I'm gonna be honest. We just gotta get away from that subject. We'll never talk about anything else tonight. But anyway. Andrew Tate. Holy shit. Isn't he the king of the internet? Always and forever, apparently. He made a response today about the continuation of his hearing. I think that's what's happened. But I'm not exactly certain. We have Liz Wheeler saying that Andrew Tate's lying in this video. And then we have Andrew Tate responding himself at Cobra Tate right here on Twitter. Billboard Chris is even jumping on it. Milk Bar TV, did Andrew Tate lie to Tucker? I don't know. Everybody's leading off with the lying part. Let's go see what he said first, then watch one reaction to it. I think that's the fairest one, first thing to do right now. But in between then, you guys should find me on Twitter at FreeJerry88. Follow me on Twitter, Last Analog Hero, or follow the show, Cosmic Marauder, The Cosmic Show. It's on Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple, PodcastIndex.org, many other platforms. Not Stitcher anymore. That's way dead, gone forever. But make sure you realize, if you can't watch this, you want to hear it remastered, the audio is better on the audio-only platforms. I pay for that remastering for the podcast. So if you don't miss it, maybe this is kind of annoying to listen to in the car or around people when it's on your phone because you hear other chaotic shit, go listen to the audio-only podcast. It's fine. It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing.
Welcome to another episode of The Tate Show. The world's basically The Tate Show at the moment, isn't it? It's kind of like The Truman Show, but I'm in the middle of it. I would say that it's, can't call it exciting. What would I call it? I don't really feel pressure.
Terrifying.
I am. It certainly has me focused. Let's leave it at that. So the reason I'm making this video is to clarify as much as I can, bound within the parameters which are obviously set to me by the Romanian judicial system. Please, everybody, understand I am in the middle of a judicial process. Post-judicial process, there's a lot more I'll be able to say. So I have to say certain things without saying them, and I hope all of you at home are perspicacious enough to pay attention and understand exactly what I'm trying to tell you. I'm going to outline the exact case against me so everybody understands, because there's been some videos going around lately. There's also been a brand new Matrix attack, which I'm going to explain how that works, which have people believing I might be guilty of something that I'm not guilty of. So I want to explain to everybody at home exactly what has happened. First, we're going to start with the fact that Tucker Carlson's a fantastic guy, on camera, off camera, absolute gentleman. I really enjoyed my conversation with him. And my interview with Tucker Carlson is the most viewed television interview in history. Isn't that amazing? The most viewed television interview in history. Now, I've discussed at length in many of my videos the fact that my massive influence is the reason I'm being attacked at all. And I've explained that the incompetence of my enemies scares me because I don't know what they're going to try next. And I've also explained that it is my influence they're afraid of, not the things I say. And then I go and get the most viewed interview in history. So part of me is happy about that, and part of me is a little bit worried about that. Beside the point, I said that I wasn't sure what my enemy was going to try next, now we know what they're going to try. Because if you believe that left-wing are all Matrix agents and right-wing are all freedom tellers and freedom believers, then you have a very naive view of the world. If it was so clear-cut, the Matrix wouldn't be able to operate. It would fail in real time. So the waters have to be muddy. There are people on the left who truly believe they're fighting for freedom. And there are people on the right who truly work for the Matrix. So it is intertwined. A lot of people on the right especially are bought and sold. And I think anybody with a brain who actually looks at the Republicans and tries to vote for any of them understands what I'm saying to you. So MSM, in its constant attacks against me and its attempt to slander my name, has failed in real time. I'd actually believe I've probably been the number one person who's destroyed MSM most fantastically. I've beaten them. They can't print anything about me without getting wrecked in the comments. Last time my team analyzed, it was 98.2% of comments on every single MSM article was in my favor. So no matter how hard they try and insult me, it doesn't work. So after getting the largest interview in the history of the world, the Matrix thought, okay, our MSM weapon isn't using, let's get all of our bought and paid for agents and attack him with them. Right-wing people. Because then maybe that will work. All they're doing is exposing themselves as controlled op. I'll leave them to do that. However, there is a video circulating which has some people believing I may be guilty of the crimes I'm accused of. So for that reason, within the confines of what I'm allowed to say, and trust me, I could be far more convincing if I didn't have confines, I'm going to do my very best to explain to you my exact situation and what I am accused of. Firstly, it is common knowledge that I used to run a webcam company. This is something I have talked about myself at length on multiple podcasts. Everybody knows I used to do this. This is a business I was involved in about 10 years ago, and I ceased all activity pertaining to anything sexually related 5.5 years ago. So I've been out of this industry for a very long time. I have nothing to do with it anymore.
It's like I'm done.
And I stopped 5.5 years ago. And when I did have the webcam company, it was operating in a few different countries because I was semi-nomadic, traveling around the world. I had some girls who I worked with, some good friends of mine, and I operated in a few different places. I want to start by saying that there are over 2,000 video chat companies inside of Romania, that there are over 600 of them in Bucharest, in the city I'm sitting in right now, that it is not illegal. Perhaps you could argue that it is heavily immoral. I'll entertain that argument. But you certainly cannot say it is illegal, because it isn't. Every girl in Miami has an OnlyFans. In fact, I think it's Canada and the USA that has the most.
Every girl in Miami has an OnlyFans. That's like a million bitches. Shit. Damn, all of them. Man, I gotta get on that. I gotta get on that Miami Top G shit.
Online video chat girls. So these Americans were coming at me saying, you did pornography to... America's full of porn stars. LA is full of porn stars. Like, all of this stuff is immoral, yes. But illegal, no. You literally have people having sex on camera, for real, with each other. And that's all accepted and perfectly legal. So a girl sitting there with a keyboard telling a guy, yeah, you're so hot, isn't illegal either. What they're saying, though, is that I use the Loverboy method. And I want to make it clear that when these charges appeared, every single girl who ever worked for me all those years ago when I had this video chat company has been contacted by authorities, and every single one of them defended me.
He is not a human trafficker. He would never rape anybody. Oh. And he would certainly never, ever human traffic anyone either, including his brother. They would never do such thing. I am just so shocked and I'm so fed up with all of these lies.
I just want to put out there that everything you're seeing on the news right now is all false accusations. As for someone who knows him personally, I can confidently say that he's such a nice man. He's very generous. He's always been respectful of me and others around him. Like, I've witnessed him in situations surrounded by women,
I believe
men,
generous.
Children, families, and he's always respected everyone, always very nice to people, very generous, so kind. I think the media is just portraying a really bad image of him right now, and it's not fair because he actually generally is a really good person.
All 100% of them, not a single one of them has made a complaint against me. Not a single one of them has complained about the way they were treated. Not a single one of them has complained about the way they were recruited or the work they did. In fact, every single one who has been contacted by authorities, and trust me, they've all been found, has written statements in my defense. Nobody is complaining about it. The criminal charges against me pertain to an organized criminal group which began in 2021. Considering that the videos that people are circulating and the webcam company that they were related to was all back in 2016, 2017, they have nothing at all to do with the criminal file. They're not in the criminal file. They're not translated to be in the criminal file. They have nothing at all to do with the case. I can't talk too much about the case against me, but what I can tell you is the rough outlines. In April of last year, two international visitors came here. They had a nice time, went to parties, asked for some money to go shopping. They were denied. They then said they were kidnapped. CCTV proof.
Okay. Hold on. He said they'd be wanting to go shopping, but it was denied. Just for the record, we're going to type that. They'd be want to go shopping, but we're denied. Everybody knows bitches be shopping, man. Come on, we really gonna throw them under the bus on this one, guys? Yeah, I gotta hear your comments in the Rumble chat. If you guys are watching me at all, please hit that like, comment, that join, subscribe, whatever the fuck it is on Rumble. Make sure you enter the chat. Your chats will come up on the stream. I'm not gonna censor you. I'm not gonna censor you guys in the Rumble chat yet. Not until I start making real money. It's not out the question. Don't think you're above some shit. But if you want to, go ahead and talk about this. This is funny. This shit is funny. I'm just going to say it.
Prove that that was a lie.
There's the Domino's truck. It's a weird statue.
After that happened, DeKalt had an open criminal file against us and decided to thoroughly investigate. I cannot explain why it took so long. I cannot explain why the case file remained dormant for such a long time. For some reason, around the time of my cancellation, which is certainly a coincidence, they decided to pick up this idea and find proof that I do use the Loverboy method to convince girls to do sexual work.
Is it that easy?
They contacted every single girl who knows me. All girls denied this and defended me. So they then found two girls in which I was telling them how to make themselves famous on TikTok, what hours to work, how many videos to make, etc. They told these two girls they are victims and they're being exploited for money. The girls themselves said, "We are not victims. This is insane. Andrew, we've never given Andrew any money."
I've never seen any of them being aggressive or rude. They've always respected people.
Ai fost amenințată?
Nu. N-am fost niciodată. Dacă eram amenințată, automat nu mai eram idiotă să stau în casa asta. Suntem prieteni buni de 2 ani de zile, cam așa, poți să mă treci pe mine ca și victimă, dacă eu n-am spus că sunt o victimă.
Can't describe me as a victim if I'm not a victim.
The girls denied this. They used this to throw us in jail. They then activated the media machine in an attempt to find what they wanted, which were girls who we've exploited. They put us all over the news in every single country in the world. They put us on billboards. They put us all over the internet. They set up hotlines. They put all of us over the BBC, all over the MSN, saying, if Andrew's ever hurt, you call this number, because they didn't have a case and they're waiting for someone to come forward and give them what they wanted. Nobody came forward. There is nobody. I've done nothing wrong. At the absolute limit of the time they could wait for their golden goose to come forward, 6 months, to hold me under detainment, 48 hours before that expired, they filed charges with what they had. And they currently have the following case against me. Two girls who said they were kidnapped on CCTV walking in and out of the house of their own free will, who were in Romania for a few days and then went to party in southern France. And two girls who made TikTok videos who said they're not victims of anything, we've never given Andrew any money. And they're trying to say that I made those girls do TikTok for massive financial gain, which is why I should lose all of my assets and all of my wealth in the world. That is the criminal case against me. It has nothing to do with the old webcam business I had. It has nothing to do with videos I made before. It has nothing to do with any of it. Now, as an ultimately accountable individual, do I understand why those videos may make authorities believe that if they hit me with the largest level of matrix attack, they're going to find what they want? I'm pretty honest and pretty reasonable. For me to sit here and go, well, I understand why they thought they put me in jail in the middle of the news, they might find something. But they didn't, because it doesn't exist. I don't hurt anybody. And everybody in my past loves me and likes me because I'm a very nice man. So that explains that. Anybody who pulls up any video from before 2021, it's not.
Right, everybody. I'm going to go take a quick break, letting the audio play. I'm just going to bounce out the camera so you guys know I'm still here, okay?
Related to the case, because the case is in 2021. Me and my brother formed an organized criminal group with the intention of making girls do TikTok for our own financial gain. The only two victims are the two girls who say they are not victims. The two girls who were kidnapped were supposed to be victims but escaped the kidnapping. There's no finances in the file. Nobody can find a single proof of any money that was made. That's the current criminal investigation. And we are now waiting for a Romanian judge to analyze the file and decide whether we are guilty of this crime or not.
I trust in them to do exactly that and to be fair. And then after that, there's going to be another conversation as to whether women can go around and accuse 7, 8, 9, 10 people of kidnapping on repeat whenever they don't get the handbag they want. And is there going to be any consequences to that? We'll see.
So this all began with a girl accusing us of kidnapping her, a girl we have the CCTV to prove was never kidnapped. Isn't it interesting that she's accused seven other men of kidnapping her in her life?
Back.
The damage to my reputation, to my company, to my life, I've spent time in jail, is basically incalculable because I'm an extremely high net worth individual. Billions, perhaps. But I'm not the person who lost the most. If you want to talk about her as a predator who's accused seven men of kidnapping her every time they won't buy her a handbag. Oh, one of shit. Those men killed himself.
That's true.
It's public record. Look it up. The pressure was so large, he killed himself. Not everybody is like my brother and I, where they can throw us in a Romanian dungeon with the cockroaches knowing we're completely innocent and will remain iron-minded. Not everybody can deal with that kind of pressure when they know they've done nothing wrong. A man killed himself. And she continues to accuse people of kidnapping or rape when she doesn't get what she wants. That'd be a far more interesting story to look into if the MSM and these right-wingers actually cared about the truth.
God has put us on this path to try and awaken the world to perhaps the predatory crime this girl likes to indulge in. And in the end, justice shall be served. So all in all, we're very positive.
I believe in truth, I believe in justice, and I believe in the Romanian judicial system. And I believe in the end, truth will prevail and justice will be served. Anybody who puts together any edit of any video that is older than 2021 doesn't understand, has nothing at all to do with the criminal case. And anybody now on the right who's attacking me in perfect sync overnight with all these other accounts, it's simply a Matrix agent which has been activated by the people in charge who understand that their primary weapon, the MSM, is no longer working. It's bouncing off of me because people love truth and they love honesty. I hope this has given you all some clarification. I understand there are accounts on the internet who keep pulling up these files they found and these conversations they found and all these garbage papers, etc. I actually don't want to talk about this case because I'm not allowed. It's very hard for me to talk about it. But when all of this concludes, in due time, I'd be very interested in having your attention to sit and do a long format video to explain to you exactly how this Matrix attack happened from head to toe, explaining every single detail of it, and you'll just understand exactly how innocent I am. If I was truly guilty of doing these things, I would still be in jail. And I'm at home. And soon I will be free. So, I hope that's some clarification. If you are not satisfied with the answer I've given you, you're unfortunately going to have to wait to the end of the trial. But I would say, for anybody with a brain who understands what I'm saying, we all understand how dates work. I'd like to think everybody at home understands a calendar. Considering that my case is pertaining to 2021 and onwards, anything before 2021 has nothing to do with it. Hope you can work that one out. I also think that everybody at home with a brain who understands that when 15 to 20 right-wingers are activated overnight with the same message, instantly told to attack somebody who just managed to achieve the largest interview in television history, that tells you a lot more about who they are than who I am.
Telling you guys, this shit's not exactly what it seems to be. I don't know if he's a misogynist. I don't know if he really lives his lifestyle. I don't know if he's just literally some kind of agent that's paid to, like, tweet bot shit. But for some reason, I'm not saying he's being targeted unfairly, but people on the left don't. I mean, the Krasensteins, like, they had crimes against them being accused, and that shit went away overnight once they started tweeting for Obama. Fucking crazy, if you ask me. If you ask my opinion on all that. We got a couple more stories tonight, though. Maybe just one more story. Let's see. What did we call this? It's Andrew Tate. I know we're going to talk about some of this RFK shit coming up. Bioweapon attack. That shit is just trending on Twitter, and it's terrifying me that it's becoming mainstream. Well, it's kind of a good thing, but I don't know why all of a sudden it's being allowed to be tweeted if it's not just completely true. It's just telling me that all of us were correct the whole time. The worst accusation I heard was that the manufacturers of the jabs, right? I think it's Moderna and Pfizer being accused of this. That they knowingly sent out bad batches of the vaccines. And like I said, this is not the opinion of me. I'm reporting on this. This is an educational reaction video. I'm just sharing this. It's being broken by some mainstream outlets, so I'm very confused on the tacit acknowledgement of this myself. But let's go ahead and just go to the Gateway Pundit really quick first, right? This is a defense of what Robert Kennedy Jr. said about the bioweapon thing. No, Robert Kennedy Jr. did not claim coronavirus was a, quote, ethnically targeted bioweapon, unquote, designed to spare Jews and Chinese. And he didn't exactly say that. There's a video here, it says, but this is the one that's in question. We're not going to read the rationale behind it. I shared a video just recently about the likelihood that Bill Gates is very aware of this advanced gene technology. It's not even gene technology. It's brain mapping technology where they could target bioweapons to certain believers of certain belief systems. We're not going to get into it tonight, but this is just part of it.
And we need to talk about bioweapons. I know a lot now about bioweapons because I've been doing a book on it for the past 2.5 years. And, and you know, the technology that we now have to develop these microbes, we've put hundreds of millions of dollars into ethnically targeted microbes. The Chinese have done the same thing. In fact, COVID-19, there's an argument that it is ethnically targeted. COVID-19 attacks certain races disproportionately. The races that are most immune to COVID-19 are because of the structure of the genetic structure among genetic differentials among different races of the receptors of the ACE2 receptor. COVID-19 is targeted to attack Caucasians and black people. The people who are most immune are Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese. But we don't know whether it was deliberately targeted that or not. But there are papers out there that show the racial and ethnic differential and of impact to that. We do know that the Chinese are spending hundreds of millions of dollars developing ethnic bioweapons, and we are developing ethnic bioweapons. That's what all those labs in the Ukraine are about. They're collecting Russian DNA. They're collecting Chinese DNA so that we can target people by race.
Oh, my God. I don't think we've got to talk too much more about that. Let's go to this article right here. This will be the last story of the night, okay? Final call out for your Rumble followers. Make sure you interact with the chat the next time. I know it's intimidating to be on chat and have it displayed live. But it's not like this when I have a guest. Mars Bars is my co-host. We want to see you guys all support the show. We want to talk about everything. For you guys that don't know my story, I got kicked off of YouTube. I almost had 1,000 followers, had that main channel axed. Had a backup channel. Start getting an axe to 244 followers instantly over the Q Shaman interview. So go back and watch that interview. It's uploaded to Rumble. I'm trying to do the same exact thing I was doing on YouTube on Rumble, uploading in real life videos around New Mexico, chilling out on the live streams with y'all. I'm doing gaming streams now that I figure out the motion capture and the remote play better. This could be some better stuff. Here is this article from Leading Report, July 16th. U.S. government report reveals Pfizer and Moderna knowingly manufactured deadly batches of COVID-19 vaccines. According to an examination of official U.S. government statistics provided by the Centers for Disease Control, very high rates of adverse reactions and fatalities have frequently been reported in relation to particular COVID-19 vaccine lot numbers. As a result, the most lethal COVID-19 vaccination batches have been located, but medicine regulators have refused to stop dispensing them. Thus, the public is still receiving them. The statistics show that only 4-5% of the COVID-19 vaccine batches produced by Pfizer and Moderna were responsible for each and every death recorded as an adverse reaction to the injections. What's possibly more worrisome is that while other, quote, benign, unquote, lots were sent to many different sites around the country, the small percentage of deadly lots were dispersed extensively. The data used in the investigation was pulled from the publicly accessible VAERS database, which can be viewed here. The Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System is a United States program for vaccine safety co-managed by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the FDA. In order to determine the risk-benefit ratios high enough to support the continued use of any specific vaccination, the program gathers information via reports made by doctors, nurses, and patients regarding adverse events, possibly dangerous side effects, that occur following the administration of vaccines. All adverse reactions reported against the Pfizer-Moderna mRNA COVID-19 injections, as well as all adverse reactions reported against the influenza vaccines, were included in the reports that were taken from the database and used to create a controlled data set. These reports have been submitted up until October 15, 2021. A total of 1,608 reports of adverse reactions to flu vaccines were found in the VAERS database, along with information on 15 fatalities and 73 hospitalizations. There were 494 different lot numbers returned in all. The lot number, which is a unique set of numbers and letters that traces a particular batch of vaccination for production through administration in a person's arm, is typically printed on the label or package that goes with the vaccine. According to the vaccination lot number that was administered just before the adverse event, the number of adverse event reports filed with VAERS against influenza vaccines is shown in the chart above. There were never more than 26 reports of adverse events associated with a single lot of influenza vaccination, with the exception of a few surges. So a lot more data analysis here. They talk about Moderna. For you audio-only listeners, go to Cosmic Marauder on Rumble. I link it in every podcast. We have to go to the craziest theory on this. But I think some of the numbers we heard from there actually might correlate on this next video. This is one of the most disturbing videos I've seen, but it's from Red Pill Drifter. CDC confirms the majority of fatal COVID vaccines were knowingly sent to red states. And this was posted June 30th. He's verified. Let's check it out.
Last year, we published a report entitled Evidence That U.S. Government Targeted Red States with Deadly Batch of Vaccine, a story that most outlets ignored. Private leaked documents from the CDC show a list of expiry dates, and only certain lots are included. The very same lots found to be highly toxic in Parda Cooper's database. This mode of deployment allows governments the ability to direct deadly batches into specific populations, such as red states. Analysis of the number of dying per 100,000 vaccinated in 50 states shows us that the overwhelming majority of vaccine deaths are happening in red states. Second smartest guy in the world on Substack also reported on it and has recently published an update, writing that now we have a more robust and far more damning view of this carefully distributed depopulation scheme. Back in Ohio of 2021, the expose publishes a report on data found in the USA's VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which reveals that 100% of COVID-19 vaccine deaths had been caused by just 5% of the batches that can be identified. And these deadly batches were not distributed evenly. The top 8 states with the highest vaccination death rate, Kentucky, Arkansas, West Virginia, Montana, Alaska, North Dakota, Wyoming, and Tennessee, are all red states. 19 of the top 24 on the list are red states. And California has been the least affected by the deadly lots of COVID vaccine. The numbers show that Kentucky has a 1,900% worse vaccination death rate than California, suggesting that Kentucky received 20 times the amount of deadly batches than California did. Florida, number 20 on the list of most vaccine deaths per vaccination, received three times the amount of deadly batches than California, with its vaccination death rate at 200% higher than California's. The author points out that these deadly batches would be better classified as rapid kill lots and slow kill lots, as we are now seeing more evidence that they kill over time. And the evidence shows that red states were targeted with the rapid kill shots. This would go along with the United Nations Agenda 2030 plan, which seeks to move the entire population into crowded cities and federalize all of flyover country in the name of climate change. They have less than 7 years to accomplish this, and they are deadly serious about it. The U.S. government is in lockstep with the United Nations, and they will resort to murder and democide to accomplish their goals of total control.
Come on, man.
Many are suggesting that this is what is happening in East Palestine, Ohio, right now. The people of America are under attack by their own government, who is never going to quit until they accomplish their goals or unless they are stopped. Reporting for InfoWars, this is
All right, you guys. That's the show for the evening. Thank you so much for making it this far. Talk to you later. Bye.